Hello and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks. Today we're going to pick up with Alexander Dugin's Martin Heidegger, The Philosophy of Another Beginning. Book 1, chapter, or part 1, chapter 2, Being and Beings, and then we're going to do chapter 3, Fundamental Ontology, hyphenated. And those will be good for this section, about 26 pages, 41 to 66. So, being and beings, differentiation, or in parentheses, ontological difference. Ontology means the study of existence. So, it's a sort of existentialism, but it's not really called that. It was called by someone else, I guess, who had read Heidegger. At the root of Heidegger's philosophy, at the root of all his thought, is the notion of ontological differentiation. In German, ontologische Differenz. This concept, la Differenz in French and Unterschied in German, becomes a fundamental philosophical act for Heidegger. We're not talking about just any differentiation, but the differentiation of all differentiations, that is to say, the differentiation between beings, Seiende, S-E-I-E-N-D-E, again, they're like the gerund form made into a noun, a formal noun, and being, Sein, beings and being. Beings and being are not one and the same. This gap encompasses the astuteness of Heidegger's philosophy in terms of the existence of sameness and non-sameness simultaneously, the pair and the non-pair of these two concepts. Being and beings. Having been anointed by Heidegger, comprehending the very nature of thought and metaphysics as well as the depths of human existence affected by the essential dyad of being and beings, as Heidegger understood it, from now on we will think like Heidegger in any situation when solving any problem and reading any philosophical work, says he. It is important to determine which German words correspond to these fundamental words in Russian. In German, Heidegger calls being das Sein, based on the das is a article, like die, das, der, the, meaning the, and it's gender-specific or neutral, as in das would be neutral, der is the and masculine, and die is feminine. Das would be neutral. Das Sein, the being. In German, Heidegger calls being das Sein, based on the infinitive form of the verb sein, to be. That is the Slavic, something I guess pronounced byte, B-Y-T-I-E, the English being, and the Greek einai, E-I-N-A-I, are somewhere between a verbal noun and a gerund. The German language has a particular form for constructing a verbal noun, which requires using the neuter article with a verb. If we were to translate sein literally, we would have to use the Old Church Slavonic verb to be, bite, in the infinitive, that is, bitte, instead of the extravagant, somewhat recent, and artificial Russian verbal noun, being. And I'm just going to not pronounce the Russian because I'm not sure how some of them are pronounced. Which is quite useful in the translation of theological texts and Western philosophy. We do not have the direct opportunity to use the infinitive form of this verb in Russian. Therefore, we use the noun being. However, we must always keep this consideration in mind, otherwise we will fall into error, the significance of which will eventually become clear. We will not be able to understand Heidegger unless we clarify for ourselves what is at stake. Das Sein und das Seiende, and das Seiende. Thus we translate sein as being, keeping the Old Church Slavonic word bitte in mind. In German, Seiende, beings, or Zushse in Russian, is formed by using an active participle from the same verb, sein, Seiende. What are beings? Old Church Slavonic had one particular form, meaning the one who is. The difference between beings on the one hand and being on the other, the difference between Seiende and sein, is the purpose and foundation of Heidegger's entire philosophy. Okay, so the difference between creatures and existence itself is the foundation of Heidegger's entire philosophy. Says Dugin, and therefore we must return to grammar once again. Heidegger emphasizes the fact that the conjugation of a verb or the formation of different grammatical forms is always the result of its inflection, its linkage to something, its elastic bending. In its pure form, the infinitive, the verb sign or the verb in Russian, exists by itself and does not relate to anyone or anything, does not signify anything, and does not bow or bend before anyone. Let us consider a simpler verb. What does to do mean? We understand what he does signifies. We are able to recognize the one who does, and we see the results of what had been done. But are we capable of conceiving or imagining what to do means in its purest form? Its infinitive does not have a clear image, and nothing pertaining to beings directly corresponds to it. To do is something that is realized by an unknown someone in relation to an unknown something. This level of abstraction is unimaginable. Nonetheless, if we attempt to deal with the infinitive of the verb to do in search of corresponding images, then we will immediately end up in a peculiar situation. On the one hand, this will tell us something, but on the other, we will not be able to grasp what we are dealing with, no matter how hard we try. This deed only acquires meaning when it undergoes conjugation, i.e. when it works together with a pronoun or a noun, that is, with a subject or an object. We grasp the meaning of the verb when it is clarified by a person or a number, when it is already inflected, bent, in its pure form, when the verb exists by itself, as a rima, as an infinitive. We do not comprehend it. It eludes us, even as concrete a verb as to do. In that case, what can we say about the verb to be, which is much more complex and elusive in its deceptive clarity? If we attempt to grasp this verb's meaning in an analogous way to the verb to do, in the infinitive, it will elude us even more decisively. The infinitive is the fundamental operation on the part of our consciousness concerning the disincarnation of demonstrable beings in action. This operation is linked to the very roots of thought, and the entire thought structure greatly depends on the way it is carried out. This structure is built upon its own basic foundations in which thought is obtained in close contact with beings. Herein lie the principal difficulties and problems of Martin Heidegger's philosophy. Subtitle: It is easy to understand beings, the foundation of thought. What are beings, or seienda? This we understand perfectly well. We are talking about that which is actual, that which is present, and that which is in front of us. Beings are, and the fact that they exist as beings, in actuality, makes them clear and obvious. Beings are intelligible. The direct nature of such clarity is located at the basis of thought as such, in the sense that the confirmation of their actuality strictly corresponds to the first operation in thought. Thought may have different forms, even the most fantastic, but in all its twists and paradoxes, it always refers us to beings as its principal assertion. Thought asserts that beings are. They begin here. If there is any doubt as to whether beings are, and that they are beings, then thought strays, meaning it gets lost, and madness ensues. The experience of beings is the primary and initial experience of thought. The verb is in the third person is quite specific. The whole aggregate of things and each of the things, including ourselves, can grant itself the status of beings, of that which is, without any issues. This is not complicated. We can only easily run into beings. Or we can easily run into beings. All that we see, all that has been, all that we think about or remember are beings. Beings are, perhaps, the most intelligible and basic idea about the relationship between man and the world, as well as himself. It is quite simple to understand beings. They represent that which gives itself to us, That which is actual, that which is present. Of course, the field of philosophy could pose a question which, at one point, concerned the sophists in antiquity, Immanuel Kant and the phenomenologists, does the knowledge that beings are relate to beings themselves or to knowledge? Is existence intrinsic to beings, or is it a predicate of reason which we can grasp through basic thought process? Kant clearly formulated this problem, having raised the question of the thing in itself, quote-unquote, and the thing for us, in quotes, thing in itself versus thing for us, that is, the question of noumena and phenomena. Edmund Husserl, the founder of phenomenology and Heidegger's teacher, proposed to introduce the concept of noema, N-O-E-M-A, in order to avoid this question, that is, beings which are beings in the area of thought and are intellectual objects, the phenomena of thought. Noema does not correspond to beings themselves, but to thoughts about beings, including the attribution of beings' traits. Despite this apparent complication, everything remains fairly simple. It is not all that important whether beings are beings by themselves, and whether it is at all legitimate to raise the question of anything by itself when we are dealing with philosophy. In other words, in the area of thought, there are only the laws of thought that are unconditional and fundamental, determining how thought deals with everything else. Whether beings exist by themselves as noemata, or whether their existence is the predicate of reason, that is, that which was declared earlier, predicare, to proclaim or to say beforehand in Latin or the German Zuspruch, has no decisive significance for reason. In both cases, we are dealing with noema. In one case, it has an object that strictly corresponds to it and is independent of it, and in the other, it has an object that does not strictly correspond to it and is not independent of it, or has no such object at all. As objects, or as phenomenological noemata, beings are, and this is obvious for thought. Thought deals with this as with something that is obvious from the outset, accepting the opposite, that beings are not. We demolish the mechanism of consciousness, disable it, and thereby cease to be thinking entities. After hypothetically ceasing to be thinking entities, we can no longer be certain as to whether we exist, i.e. whether we are entities, inasmuch as we no longer possess the methods to determine the existence or non-existence either of ourselves or of that which is all around us. In this case, someone else, one who retains reason, will decide for us whether we are or not. Man was defined by the ancient Greeks, starting with Aristotle, as Greek phrase, that is, as an animal, endowed with word language thought, hyphenated, word hyphen language hyphen thought, an animal endowed with word language thought. Losing our logos, we not only lose our humanity, but also our animality, leaving the concern with our species classification to others. Next subtitle, Being is a Problem, the Key Question in Philosophy. Beings are intelligible and transparent, and their intelligibility and transparency comprise the foundation of thought. When it comes to being, however, everything is much more complicated. When thought takes its first step, often unnoticed by the thinker himself, it asserts, implicitly, that beings are. This is not a problem or a question, but the basis of thought. One who simply thinks always makes this initial move. Yet if the thinker begins to think about how he thinks, i.e. thinking about thought, then the reflection about beings acquires a completely different character and occurs on a different, higher level of consciousness. Reflecting upon our own thinking, we apply the features of beings to it, too, in one way or another. Perhaps this does not occur as clearly as with Descartes, with his cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am, I exist, but the ancient Greeks were already aware of something along these lines. This time around, this issue demands questioning beings in order, in the very least, to separate their properties imagined by the thinker from those properties of beings that the thinker is. This, according to Heidegger, is the key question in philosophy, the Leitfrage, leading frage, light means leading question, which is formulated as follows. What is the being of beings as such? In other words, what is common to all beings that makes them beings, or what is generally intrinsic to beings? What this key question in philosophy addresses is being. It is conceived of through beings, but as something different from beings, although intrinsic to them. We can describe the genesis of this question in two ways. Empirically or rationalistically, empirically this question will look like two consecutive stages of natural speculation about the fact that that beings are a given. The first stage is a simple affirmation that beings are. The second stage strives toward generalized observations about beings, toward the systematization and hierarchization of the features of beings. Observing beings, consciousness begins to notice certain regularities, and at a point in time, the appearance of philosophy in the ancient world, reaches the realization that beings as a whole have a common property. Thus emerges the notion of being, and the corresponding question, what is this being? The second way to address the same question could focus on thought regarding thought with an underlying and growing conviction that beings capable of thinking about other beings are beings of a higher order. Their existence demands a different higher form, i.e. thinking beings are principally different from non-thinking beings. This highest form of beings is also associated with beings as a whole, with what beings have in common, and leads to the following question, what is the being of beings? Dugin certainly believes there's some value in this kind of circle jerk, and I personally am less sure about it. Thus, being as sein, as the Greek Ani, as the infinitive, appears in the area of thought at that very moment when thought begins to examine something that goes beyond the consideration of beings as such. This is the beginning of philosophy, leaving the framework of initial assertions in the vein of beings are. And herein lies a fundamental issue. Thought focused solely on beings as they are in direct experience is potentially boundless. Thought can sort beings, rearrange, compare, differentiate, and combine them without moving up to the next level, that of speculation about being. For this reason, ancient Greeks considered thought about the essence of beings as an invasion of something divine. The first fragment about the unity of beings in Logos, written by Heraclitus of Ephesus, refers to this point specifically. Greek quote here in block quote. If you do not listen to me but to the Logos, it would be wise, abiding by it, to say, everything is one. In lectures about Heraclitus's Logos, Heidegger emphasized the fact that Heraclitus associated Logos with divine lightning. Only the lightning of divine Logos, surpassing the intellectual capabilities on the part of the philosopher himself, do not listen to me, in quotes, can push one to conceive of beings as a whole in this excerpt described as the unity of all. Heidegger also underscored the fact that in Aristotle's philosophy, unity is almost a synonym of being. It is, ev or hen is a synonym of on. Therefore, we can interpret this fragment specifically as one that links logos with being, thereby elevating the entire problem of thought to the second highest level. The key question in philosophy is formulated at this level. The place where the question of being is raised is where philosophy begins. This boundary separates a mere thought from philosophical thought. I don't know, that's an assertion, is that true? I don't know, why couldn't you begin at some other point? Always ask yourself the opposite of what's asserted, why isn't that true? The key question in philosophy was formulated incorrectly, is the next subtitle. All that has been said above about beings and being is yet to contain anything new and unusual, perhaps, apart from the stubborn fixation on the relationship between being and beings, that's being with a capital B, versus beings with a small, plural with a small b. This relationship, or Bezug, is the single most important problem for Heidegger's entire philosophy. The classical history of philosophy describes the set of ontological problems somewhat like this, assuming this to be a common issue. Again, ontology, the study of existence. Heidegger's radical novelty is expressed in his obvious dissatisfaction with the very formulation of the key question in philosophy, quote-unquote, starting from his initial text on phenomenology. He is wary of the original philosophical fundamentals, which substantiate the idea that being is the common property of beings. He views this idea as something profound, foundational, and decisive for the entire process of Western European philosophy, and interprets it as a fatal error, a mistake, and an omission of something that is vitally important. It is not that easy to express or describe the latter, but he grasps it intuitively as the turning point of world history. According to Heidegger, the relationship between beings and being was already interpreted incorrectly in antiquity. Although this mistake was infinitely small during the initial stages, it grew alongside all the consequences of philosophy's establishing foundations until ultimately transforming into the total ontological nihilism of modernity, especially during the 20th century. According to Heidegger, we must seek the key to understanding the present state of affairs in philosophy, culture, and even politics at the dawn of Western European civilization, in the way in which the very first philosophers resolved the question of correlating being, sein, and beings, seiende. Even at that point, something went wrong in terms of clarifying the relationship between being and beings, in the way the key question in philosophy, quote-unquote, was raised. What went wrong? Why did it go wrong exactly? And what should happen to make it right? These questions comprise the core of Martin Heidegger's philosophy. End of chapter. All right, moving on to section 1, number 3, or part 1, number 3. We have fundamental ontology, and it's hyphenated for some reason. The complexity of Bezug is the first subtitle. Working out the nature of ontological problems, Heidegger advances the following thesis. Sein ist das Seiende nicht. Being is not beings. On the one hand, this means nothing but the fact that thoughts about being of beings, as beings, must take us away from beings, which is almost obvious. They do take us away, but not in the fashion that this should be done. Here, the structure of Bezug, relationship, moves to the forefront. Bezug, relationship, clarifies the correlation between beings and being, and is structured in a very specific way in the field of ancient philosophy. Reflection on the being of beings leads ancient Greek philosophers to the concept of essence as the common attribute that unites all beings in their greatest shared quality. Essence in Greek, something in Russian, is a feminine noun formed from the present participle of the verb to be, sein in German. This term was later translated into Latin as essentia or substantia, which obscured its meaning. And here we go, get into the importance of the etymology and the roots of these words, to go back to the roots, to find out the actual thought that could be buried, as he's saying. In Russian, the word sushnost is the most precise translation of this term. There was a long footnote here that's worth reading. Footnote 1 for part 1, chapter 3. In order to emphasize the specific way in which Heidegger understands the question of being, I propose to utilize the German formula Fundamental Ontologie. So one of those classic German compound words, and that explains why in English it's hyphenated rather than freestanding. Fundamental Ontology, but as a hyphenated word in German, Fundamental Ontologie, the same exact thing, but jammed together as one word. Fundamental ontologische is the adjective. Fundamental ontological, which Heidegger uses himself. This strategy is not like using other Heideggerian terms such as Dasein, Gefühlt, Gestell, and Das Man, leaving them untranslated in order to emphasize the unique meaning that this philosopher put into carefully selected words, so that these are not, or these are special even within German, so that we don't translate them into Russian or English. We use them in German with their particular meaning that the philosopher had for them, like Dasein, he's saying, or like Gewirrt, or like Gestell, or Das Man. Okay, taking them back to the source of their philosophical hyphen poetic and etymological significance. Fundamental ontology is not fundamental ontology, two separate words, but rather the way in which Heidegger understands the most profound level of ontological analysis. However, the latter is only applicable within the framework of his unique teaching concerning nature and the structure of Dasein. Part 3, Dasein, and the second part of the book are dedicated to this subject, as well as in the context of the New Beginning. In some cases, he uses the expression onto-ontology in order to underscore that fundamental ontology is not just another level logically constructed over the ontic, but, on the contrary, the kind of thought about being that preserves the continual freshness of direct contact with the ontic as a form of Dasein's existence. Ending that footnote. Now let's see. Back to the text. Here we must once again address Heidegger's meta-language. He insists that Ovoia is Seiendheit, i.e. a particular way to conceive of being, that is a Greek word, is Seiendheit, in which it is equated with the exact shared quality of all beings as beings. It is this kind of understanding that determines the particular path of development in Western philosophy, where being as, Greek term, is persistently and invariably thought of specifically as ovoia, expressed in the formula sein, Seiendheit. Being is the essence of beings. That seems kind of circular. This is the Bezug of Western, the relationship of Western European philosophy, which is structured upon this particular ontological picture and is based specifically on this way of thinking. Being is the essence of beings. Quote, and consequently, this leads to the establishment of two parallel levels, the level of beings and the level of essence, or substance, or Seiendheit. And here, Heidegger makes a highly critical assertion. Ancient philosophy, and all contemporary Western European philosophy following it, which differentiate being and beings through essence, effectively overlook the difference between being and beings. Thus, they created an abstraction from beings based upon the direct analogy with beings themselves. As a result, Western European philosophy conceived of being as the essence of beings, as distinct from unique and concrete beings, but coinciding with beings in their universality. In other words, it ultimately viewed being as beings. This was, of course, a different kind of beings, one from the highest supreme rank, but an example of beings nonetheless. Ultimately, being acquired the attributes of beings, i.e., it then became possible to make such statements as, such as, being is as Parmenides had done. This kind of an assertion is possible only in relation to beings, even the most sublime, primordial, simple, and unified kind. If being is, then it belongs to the category of beings, even if not simply as one of the beings, but rather as the essence of beings. The Greeks, like other people of the West, loved beings too much and became victims of this fatal love, which predetermined the entire system of Western European philosophy. Heidegger mentions the latter not with irritation and arrogance, but rather with profound understanding and empathy. Being, as that which makes beings what they are, must somehow be combined with beings and connected to them. And if we follow this idea through, at some point, we would indeed become convinced that being is, that it is beings, and that it is the most important and purest of beings. The opposite assertion, that being is not beings, can only be accepted up to a certain extent. At that point, we would have to emphasize that being, as the shared feature, is not the same as beings, as particulars. However, both the particular and the shared have one attribute that unites them. They both are. Yet, understanding the depth of ontological differentiation and Bezug in traditional philosophy, Heidegger tells us, this is the whole point, and the principal error is rooted here. If being is not beings, then it is the latter that must be the object of ontological study. However, in this case, it cannot be identical to the essence of beings, and consequently it is not a shared attribute for beings. Here, being is not. It is not beings. It is none of beings. This also includes the non-essence of beings and the non-shared attributes, not oivoia or koivov or koinon. In other words, Heidegger asserts that being is nothingness. Das Sein ist das Nix. Making Western European philosophy a great delusion, lasting 2,500 years, as it failed to recognize this issue. Being is nothingness. Das Sein ist das Nix. Next subtitle, Ontics. Analyzing the relationship, Bezug, between beings, Seiende, and being, Sein, Heidegger introduces three levels of ontology which would allow us to consider this problem from another perspective. Heidegger gives their definitions in his most important work, Sein und Zeit. First comes the ontic level from the Greek. Beings, ontos, is the genitive case which usually helps form compound words in Greek. When we attempted to answer the question about what beings are in the most direct and accessible manner, we are in the domain of the ontic. The ontic dimension assumes the mind's direct grasp of the outside world with all its distinctions and variety. At this point, the mind is yet to question what the beings of beings, what the being of beings, or the essence of beings are, and restricts itself to basic affirmations that beings are beings. Thought as such, in its most natural and basic form, operates specifically in this dimension. To think about beings as beings means to compare one to the other, to line beings up, and to juxtapose them amongst themselves, always remaining at the same level in terms of thought topography, i.e. the space of thought, without going beyond its limits, i.e. not raising the questions as to where beings originated, what the being of beings is, where the end of beings is, and of what this end is. The ontic sphere is typical for both hard sciences and everyday thought. It ranges from the highly developed calculation systems and classification to the most banal mental reactions on the part of the average person in the most diverse cultures, from the most primitive to the most sophisticated. The ancient Greeks defined the sphere of beings by using the collective concept physis, and according to Aristotle, the area of ontic thought can be called physics. A little later we shall see just how much is invested in this concept. In regard to philosophy, ontic thought establishes its groundwork. This is already considered thought, but is not yet philosophical in the fullest sense of the word. This is thought based on words, but not concepts. Thoughts about the obvious, but without abstraction. These thoughts operate with things, but not essences, even if these things have a mental nature, i.e. are noemata in Edmund Husserl's sense. For Heidegger, this thought level is extremely important, since this is where philosophy originates. And how it began, how it deals with the stratum of the ontic worldview, and reflection about the world, in which direction it sets off, and where it moves on, all have the principal significance for the entire trajectory of philosophy's development and, in fact, predetermines its fate and its end. People who talk about things, but they're not abstract in the level of ideas. and how this is the basis of philosophy. Next, ontology. Heidegger calls the second level ontological. Ontology begins by asking the key question in philosophy, what is the being of beings? What are beings as a whole? What is the essence of beings? The problem of qualitative differentiation between beings and being appears at this point. And consequently, ontology is based on clarifying the structure and the quality of the relationship between one and the other. Here, the question of being is placed at the very core of thought. These are philosophy's origins, which, in contrast to thought as such, move to a principally new level. At this level, the question about the being of beings and the fact that being and beings are not identical is the focal point. According to Heidegger, pre-Socratic philosophers founded ontology like philosophy. Philosophy and ontology are identical concepts from the standpoint of being. Plato and Aristotle definitively established these two subjects, which entered Christian theology and modern philosophy in their completed form. The way in which the first philosophers comprehended the question about being of beings turned out to be both destiny and fate for all Western European philosophy. Their choice and their solution to this set of problems laid down the fundamental groundwork for the entire subsequent philosophical process. They are the founders of Greek's ontology, which became the ontology for the entire field of European philosophy. Solving the question of being, ontology identifies the being of beings with the essence of beings and asserting the difference between being and being as an attribute common to all beings, and at the same time relates to being as a kind of beings, only one of a higher rank. According to Heidegger, the most important point is that ontology strays from its predestined path during the very first stages. The birth of philosophy and the breakthrough to logos at lightning speed separated thought from ontics and pushed it to leap beyond the horizons of beings and to the discovery and revelation of being, the abstraction, the capital letter. This would have been genuine transcendence, i.e. a true surpassing of limits. It, and only it, would have secured an irreversible and incontrovertible significance for philosophy. Grasping beings ontically from the outset, the Greeks' fierce thought, which had developed a taste for freedom, should have leapt into nothingness, into non-beings, where it should have searched for being as the authentic basis of beings. But the Greeks did otherwise and created an ontology that was not based on nothingness, but on the essence of beings. They had thus given birth to fictitious transcendence, which did not break through to the true source of beings, their hidden foundation, but doubled the topography of beings with an additional level, an abstracted being. The latter remained part of beings, however they might have called it, but at the same time served as the supreme source for beings in the ontic arena, i.e. as being. In later works, especially the 1936 to 1946 period, Heidegger introduced a very important element of his metalanguage, spelling the word sign, being, in two variants, the regular sign, S-E-I-N, and the archaic sign, S-E-Y-N, which would be obsolete. This spelling variation possesses radical significance. In Russian, there is no possible way to convey the two spellings. In English, we occasionally see being, B-E-Y-N-G. I've never seen that myself, maybe in philosophy. Ontology operates with being as sign, meaning S-E-I-E-N, height, sign-ness. Height means like ness. Like Gesundheit means healthness. Health, but healthness, essentially. Sign is the S-E-Y-N, is the kind of being that, on the contrary, entirely eludes ontology and is not grasped through beings, plural, but otherwise most likely in terms of non-beings, i.e. nothingness. Sign represents genuine transcendence and authentic philosophy, which Heidegger proposes to create. Sign refers then to what's done right, so he's correcting their mistake. Thus, ontology, in its extant form, devises the artificial construct of essentialism over beings. This construct becomes the domain of philosophy, while philosophy itself is considered the queen of the sciences. In turn, philosophy determines the principles, foundations, and methodologies of physical sciences, as well as those of ethics, grammar, mathematics, geometry, philology, aesthetics, etc. All this is the result of one original and infinitely small error. Maybe. Instead of becoming a truly more profound, essentialist, and original form of thought, ontology, as it developed, only continued to distort the normal functioning on the part of ontic thinking, creating obstructions and dead ends, distorted and warped beings and the understanding of beings. Instead of explaining, Greek term, ontology violated it, imposing abstract constructions on two beings, rooted in the incorrectly oriented basic movement of the logos. Greek philosophy configured the logos in ontology, differentiating it from ontics in such a way that it operated with essence as though being, equating being to beings, i.e. the source of Parmenidean, being is, nothingness is not. This excess of false positivity brought the negative destruction and death into the ensemble of beings. Instead of the salvation of beings through being, like greater life force, logos destroyed beings through the conjuring up of a generalized essence, the abstraction of living creatures. With Aristotle, the philosophical intuition of the first Greek philosophers acquired a completed and systematized form. And it is significant that one of his works bears the title Metaphysics, that which follows physics. Physics as a phenomena and as one of Aristotle's other treatises. Metaphysics proves to be practically identical to ontology, the study of existence, and Western European philosophy in general, because its task is to substantiate the domain of origins beyond physics, i.e. ontics. So ontics is physics, ontology is metaphysics. Metaphysics proves to be practically identical to ontology and Western European philosophy in general, because its task is to substantiate the domain of origins beyond physics, i.e. ontics. Heidegger insists that all Western European philosophy is actually metaphysics, i.e. ontology, even the kind that explicitly rejects any appeal to metaphysics, for instance, the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche, the philosophy of life, positivism, or pragmatism. Metaphysics as ontology became the sole and compulsory style of Western European thought long ago, which is essentialist in each and every case. It is irrelevant whether we are dealing with a system of ideas, idealism, things, realism, materialism, concepts, conceptualism, or values, axiology, a system of the practical, pragmatism, vulgar political worldviews, or even nihilism. All these are an expression of metaphysics, because the thought matrix is one and the same, and in all cases, and is based on the false ascription of transcendence to one's preferred position. Toward fundamental ontology, again with the hyphen. Let us move on to the most important point, the core of Heideggerian philosophy, criticizing ontology and metaphysics as false and identifying the sources of the key error in terms of the first steps taken by Greek philosophers, which predetermined the subsequent course of Western philosophy, already presupposes the existence of alternatives. If we recognize what was wrong, then by using reverse analogy, we can attempt to determine how things should be or should have been in order for everything to be as it should. Heidegger takes us up close to the following train of thought. The question of ontic thinking, natural thought prior to the question of beings, being, remains the basis of subsequent philosophical development. However, as philosophy develops, and as ontology or metaphysics becomes more structured and extensive, we move further and further away from the ontic, replacing it with the ontological. At the same time, there is an increase in technological displacement of nature and in the artificial products of human society. Ontology crushes everything, including its ontic foundations. Since we are about to reconsider ontology at its source, it is necessary to revisit the ontic in the exact form that it had at the beginning of philosophy's history when it was new and fresh. Heidegger solves this problem in the book Sein und Zeit by focusing on Dasein. In order to make this happen, Heidegger has to sort through the massive deposits that comprise the edifice of European philosophy from the pre-Socratics up to the 20th century. However, this crucial operation cannot yield any results and will only take us to the base level, toward clarifying ontic thought and its structure. To some degree, phenomenology, including the Lebenswelt, life world, concept, and its basic methodologies, proposes to tackle the same task. Reaching the ontic and clearing away the ontological, we end up in the same position as the creators of Western philosophy. That's a pull quote there. Let's read that again. Reaching the ontic and clearing away the ontological, we end up in the same position as the creators of Western philosophy, responsible for establishing the basic trajectory of its future development. Let's get it right this time. This means that the same problems and the same questions now face us. It is at this point that things must happen differently. We must address, we're getting a mulligan after 2,500 years. This means that the same problems and the same questions now face us. It is at this point that things must happen differently. We must address the basic questions in terms of developing the logos in a different way, but at the same time, we must ask all the basic questions all over again. Heidegger mentions that if the key question in philosophy, the Leitfrage, targeted the essence as a common attribute of beings, then the basic question in philosophy, one found at the base, the Grundfrage, must be the question about the truth of being, über Wahrheit des Seins, that is, sign with the Y, the old one. Philosophy originates at a point when we ask the question about the being of beings. This is a flash of the divine logos, illuminating a new dimension of thought and leading to new horizons. But we know that in the case of ontology, this question was formulated in an exceedingly poor manner, whereas its answer was truly catastrophic. Ontology, in an attempt to rise above the ontic, created false transcendence. Metaphysics doubled the topography of beings. It added the abstraction on top of the actual physical stuff. In it, the blueprint for the same kind of beings was added to beings, but this time in its essential section, that of its essence. In ontology, the Greek logos severed its ties to beings and their ontic perception, thereby deforming them, but it could not break through to being as such. This tragedy is responsible for the history of Western Europe and its philosophy. What did Oscar Wilde? It is only the shallow who refuse to judge by appearances is almost what he's saying here, it seems to me. Heidegger proposes to focus our attention on this point, returning to ontics, that is, to what is readily accessible to perception in its uncorrupted state is insufficient. We must undergo the explosion of the logos the second time and live through the new experience of the lightning. This time around, learning from the bitter experience of making a critical mistake, we must formulate the question of being directly, not through beings, Zeienda, and the dead-end road of essentialism, Zeindheit, Zeind with an I. This time around, ontological differentiation must be carried out radically, focusing a philosophical attention on being itself. Sein, the older one, which is not a part of beings and cannot be determined by assigning the is attribute to it, i.e. on being that is not and consequently is nothingness. Starting out from the ontic, from beings and their most obvious accessible characteristics, this time we must progress in another direction. We must not rise above beings, remaining bound to them and destroying them with this ambiguous relationship, as in the case of European metaphysics. Instead, we must glance below, delve into beings' primordial source, a place where nothing exists and where nothingness is. But this nothingness, with a capital N, is not simply non-beings generated from beings. This is nothingness which makes beings what they are, but which does not turn into beings. This nothingness is life-giving, constituting all with its quiet power. This is what fundamental ontology is, the kind of ontology built along principally new patterns as compared to the entire preceding philosophy. Fundamental ontology will let the new kind of logos shine. This time, however, it will not focus on beings, but on nothingness. The logos of classical metaphysics conceived of nothingness as the antithesis of beings, or generally as the antithesis of essence, and ultimately as the antithesis of itself, which led to total nihilism. After all, operating in this manner, it destroyed, by ignoring, that very real nothingness, sein equals nichts, nichts equals nothing, that gave life to beings. In turn, the logos of fundamental ontology will conceive of nothingness not as the antithesis of beings, but as their life-giving, it's Mother Nature giving us our gifts, as their life-giving and eternally present source, which, removing beings as beings, confirms that they are part of being. So non-being or nothingness gave birth to beings, small b, which are part of being, big B, which correctly directed ontology is going to understand. How is fundamental ontology possible? It is possible inasmuch as philosophy is an arena of absolute freedom, one in which thought can complete the most daring and most unimagined turns. But this is only possible if the thinker's freedom is combined, risking everything, with the truth of being, capital B, and will allow this truth to come to fruition. Martin Heidegger's philosophy is the transitional philosophy on the way to creating fundamental ontology. He concludes chapter 3 of part 1. So, difficult stuff to think about. I'm not really entirely sure what to make of it. Saying the Greeks started with beings, and which is the physical level, noticing them, observing them. They seem obviously to exist, and they made an illicit or false transcendence, trying to abstract the essence of being from the actual creatures or beings that were prancing around in the field. And this was a misstep, but it was a misstep that produced 2,500 years of European philosophy. Well, now we need to go back to the beginning and look at it in a completely different way to get the ontology right. And it's not being we should look at, but nothingness is the new being, I guess is how we might phrase it today in light of that stupid TV show that people talked about a lot a couple years ago. Anyway, let's leave it there for now, and we'll pick it up next time with chapter 4. Four or more. Thanks for being with me. I'll be back with you again real soon.